accession number 23362, Reel 4.
Elaine Treverton, Reel 4. Yes, you were explaining about the food, Elaine.
Yes, the army couldn't live off the land because it would have deprived the local people of their food, and they wouldn't have been able to supply enough anyway. But I think it was the previous governor or whoever was the senior civil servant in the area who made it clear that we mustn't deprive them of the food. So although I think that there was a certain amount of, it was allowed a certain amount of buying fresh vegetables and things, it was very limited. It all had to come up from headquarters. I mean, yes, people did go to the bazaar and buy, you know, fruit for themselves and so on, but it couldn't have been on any large scale, otherwise, well, there just wouldn't have been that amount of food around.
Was life more difficult during the monsoon period? I was thinking of the pictures you showed me of the very bad roads that you had to travel along. Could you describe what it was like, you know, trying to get your lorries and canteens along?
It was absolutely, the rain was absolutely really torrential. And all, you know, all one's shoes went mouldy overnight and things like that, and everything was always damp, and it never really got dry. I think in the very, very worst of it, we probably didn't go out. I don't remember, but I think it would have been impassable, most of it. So in that sense, you know, the monsoon was a factor. And it was. I mean, the build-up to the monsoon, you were just desperate for the rains to start because it was so humid. It was, you know, oppressive and humid. And then when the rains came, you sort of rushed out into the rain and thought, how lovely. But after a bit... But you knew exactly when it was going to start. Within 2 or 3 days, they knew the monsoon time. We had these great big capes which covered us. And... I think putting stores in the truck and so on. I think there must have been a couple of weeks or so when we really didn't do anything very much, which we couldn't get round. And as I say, we didn't have the canteens that original canteens would have been absolutely useless in those situations.
Yes, what was wrong with them? You know, the ones, the original. Real canteen.
Yes, it was a great big long canteen with shelves and things. It was all quite carefully fitted out inside, but it didn't have four-wheel drive, and it was very low slung and very heavy and very I think probably a bit unsafe, you know, it was top heavy. So there were only certain canteen areas where we could use the actual canteens. A lot of places we used trucks, just selling from boxes instead of having it all out on shelves and things, just having, you know, planning it carefully so that you had the cigarettes and things which got most bought in the front and other things in the back, and you sat on a box that sort of bumping over the roads. It was not comfortable.
How did you cope with making so much tea, you know, when you went out to bigger groups? You know, would you have boiled water in bulk?
I think we did. I think we had, or maybe we, some of the places where they knew we were going to be there, we'll say at 10 o'clock they would have these big army dekchis, these big things ready boiling for us. I think that's probably what we did. You know, we said we'd be there at 10 o'clock, and we had these great big, we had urns and things, so we had... I think we used to, if we weren't going very far, we'd start off with the tea ready made. But otherwise, probably we got the hot water from them.
I imagine you didn't use little teapots for the...
No, we had great big... teapots or urns, and I suppose people brought their own mugs. I think we couldn't have supplied mugs for everybody. People brought their own enamel mugs and we poured the tea and lots of sugar.
Yes, and cigarettes, you were saying, were very popular then as well.
Yes. And where we could, we used to make these great big, or have the cook make these great big slab cakes. And sort of mug of tea and a piece of cake, you know.
Who were the troops you served? Do you remember the different divisions or...
I don't remember them offhand, but we had a whole variety. I mean, there were Hindu, Muslim, Sikhs, and West Indians. Towards the end, we had a couple of West Indian regiments who were there, and
did you have different demands, you know, according to...
Yes. The Muslims, by and large, didn't smoke, so we didn't sell many cigarettes to them. There were differences. There would be one lot who would be much more keen on buying boot polish. And whether they, you know, what We also wondered whether they spread it on biscuits and things to make it. We never quite knew what. There would be a sort of a sudden rush of people wanting writing paper or something, you know, because maybe they'd run out, or run out together, as it were, since the last topping up. But I don't. Well, what else did we sell? I can't remember there being a particular run on any one thing, but you could often get caught out and not have enough of some. Somebody would buy something and other people would say, oh, that's rather good, I'll have one of those, and then we'd begin to run out, you know.
Did you have to do any accounting?
Oh. Yes, unfortunately, it wasn't. We had these great big books and we had to do a monthly inventory and count the number of packets of cornflakes. Cornflakes was another thing we took, and so on. And then you had to work out how it compared with the actual cash you had, and of course it never tallied. And you know, sometimes it was quite a lot out. And so they sent a young accountant round to sort of see what we were doing and trying to get us to do it better. And so he was explaining about it, and then one of the wasps said, yes, that's all right, but how do you cook the books? And the young man was very took aback. He said, well, it's not for me. You'd, in the extent that you say that you had to write off two more packets of cornflakes than you actually did to try and make the money tally. But we didn't feel it was a terribly important bit of our lives, really. Got the money and handed it in.
Was it exhausting work at times? You know, would you have been out for a long time?
Yes. At times it was very... I can remember at Cox's Bazaar, we must have gone a long distance and over very bad roads and hot. And you had to have the truck sort of swept out and then filled up, stocked up for the next morning. So when you'd get back at night, you know, it might be quite late and you'd feel very tired, but then it would be somebody else taking over the restocking. You didn't have to do that, but it was tiring and it was uncomfortable. You see, you just sat on a box in the back of, and you get all the dust swirling up from through the back.
How about the driving? Who did the driving?
We had either a British other rank or an Indian other rank. One of the problems we had was getting it across that we needed to go to the loo. And one place we were, I was looking at the thing, it was Manipur Road, I think. Was Dimapur the halfway? Yes, well, it was at Dimapur then, where the two lots changed over so that they could go, one lot go down, one lot go up. We were serving this particular unit, and there were, what, two or three British officers, but I think they were Indian troops. And we said, could we wash our hands, please? And he said, bring a bowl of water and hold it for them. So we had to sort of say, I think the thing was that they didn't think, maybe like the Queen, they thought we didn't need to go. Or they felt, you know, all they had was very primitive hole in the ground, or, you know, they didn't like to show us. And of course we were bursting, because at Manipur Road, or at the change to Dimapur, we'd have started with the convoy that was coming up at some early hour in the morning, and then we'd go right on till about midday, and then we'd, you know, go on through the afternoon to the lot that was going down. And, you know, it became quite a problem, really, because we were young and embarrassed, and they were young and embarrassed. And we got a bit tougher about saying, you know, can we disappear, or we need to...
And I suppose it was difficult with so many men about at times, wasn't it?
Yes.
To get out of the way.
Yes. On one occasion, they brought us a jerry in the officers' mess bit, which was a tent, but you know, it was a bit public. So it was always rather a problem. But we didn't need to go very often because we were dehydrating so much, I think. But it was just a...
Did you ever see any Japanese, you know, during your time?
Other than
Rangoon?
No, I didn't. But the Wasby, who was running the Milestone 82 team... They came across some dead Japanese. But otherwise I didn't see them until the surrender.
Did you ever go into the hospitals, you know, where the battle wounded were? Did you ever work in the hospitals, take stuff to the hospitals?
I don't remember that we did, because they were emergency hospitals and got people out very quickly. I don't remember doing any actual hospital. And of course the hospitals as much as possible tended to be as far away from the lines as possible, whereas we were further forward.
Did you ever meet other women apart from Wasbys who were in the front, you know, as you were, other groups of women?
Well, we had the nurses who were in the emergency hospitals. Otherwise not.
And how about your the social life, you know, when you went from place to place? Were you normally looked after, you know, invited for meals and drinks?
Oh yes, we were made a great fuss of. As soon as we sort of arrived somewhere, there would be somebody coming along saying, I'm from the engineers department, is there anything I can do, or do you, you know, and people would come and sort of see us, and sort of people would drop in and give them a cup of coffee, or, you know, they'd always come with some excuse, but, you know, they just wanted to see us and have a chat and so on. And then, as I say, we would get invited to the officer's mess or the sergeant's mess. We liked being invited to the sergeant's mess because they had some, particularly the engineer sergeants, because they sort of managed to find the odd chicken that fell into their hands or so on, you know. So we got rather better fed.
Did they have dances? You know,
yeah, we used to have concerts and things, yes. There used to be concerts, and we used to be invited to the concerts.
Are there any memorable ones that, you know, you can think of?
What, Minensa and so on? Yes. They quite once or twice they were billeted on us, where because we had, if they had women in the team, they would, in the ENSA group, they would come and stay with us. And we had quite a lot of well-known names, Gert and Daisy and Vera Lynn and Florence Desmond and so on, I can remember.
Cool. Who were Gert and Daisy?
We had the comedians, Gert and Daisy Walters, who were sisters of Jack Warner, of the police, well, it wasn't videos in those days, films. And they were, I suppose, in their 50s. They were real troopers, and they would go around and visit the units as well as putting on concerts. And they were very popular with everybody. And Vera Lynn was, she went to the hospital in Kohima, but she was not, she didn't sing on the wards, which really we felt that somehow Gert and Daisy would have managed a comic song or something, whatever, but she was sort of, her publicity manager was making sure that her voice was all right for the evening concert, so she wasn't as popular as she might have been in that particular bit.
Did she stay with you?
She stayed with us, yes, down in Dimpur. She stayed for about 4 or 5 nights, I think. And people were invited to come and have a meal with her and so on. We were I mean, we weren't. She didn't involve us in any way. We were just the hotel, really. But
she didn't invite you to the
meeting. I think it was just not thinking it, you know. But we were hoping that we would have some of these rather exotic tin stuff, exotic to us tin stuff that somehow they'd provided. But it all went on. People who came to see her.
Was she popular with the troops, you know, with the concerts?
Well, she wasn't, that's the only bit of contact I had with her. She wasn't, because she didn't sing on the wards, because it was felt that she was being ungenerous about it, and these were the very ill people in hospital after Kohima, and a lot of them didn't survive. She would say, when they'd say, oh, sing us a song or something, she would say, a little later, so she got known as in Urdu was Tora Peachy, was a little later, so she was known as Miss Tora Peachy. But I think in other places people were very glad to have these concert tour people to visit. I think they made a mistake in sort of dressing in khaki or shorts and things, whereas really what the troops wanted to see was sort of something very feminine and you know, remind them of home.
And you were saying Florence Desmond, was it, came as well?
Yes, she came, and she was sort of singing, you know, rather to begin with slightly risky songs, which didn't go down very well, and then she made some comment which was seen as being denigrating of royalty, and they booed, which was very unusual. But you know, these were all the things that they were there fighting for, and they felt that she was being a bit flippant and unnecessarily cynical, and they didn't fit in with their mood. They wanted something romantic and soppy, really.
Did they talk to you about their families and sort of love affairs, the troops, you know, did they confide in you?
Yes, they would produce photographs of the family and you know, say where they were living and you know, if I get through this war, X, Y and Z. And I think we had a role there, and we didn't have much opportunity because it would be a sort of groups of people, but somebody were standing around after the canteen. But I think that was one of the things that they felt they could... and I think they felt they could say they were frightened to us, that they couldn't say to each other, you know. One lot, we were going out on night patrol and had hand grenades, you know, hanging on belts around their waists and so on. They were actually going out on patrol, and it was, you know, they knew it was dangerous. And you know, one of them said, how his stomach was churning because he was going out, you know, and we sort of said, oh well, wish you all the luck, come back safely. And I think those things were important to them, because they would be joshing each other and trying to keep their morale up, but they wouldn't admit to being any more than the ones in ACAB would admit to being frightened about me. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't the thing to do, but it was all right to say it to a woman.
Were you ever, did you ever have supplies of alcohol, sort of rum or other?
We got 3 bottles of beer. No, we got half a bottle of whiskey a month, which we used to light the Petromax lamps with, or rum. Well, that was rum that we got, because... And we were none of us particularly interested in it, but we would have liked the beer. We used to swap with the Americans. That was one of the places where the Americans were. They had plenty of... No, it was the other way around. They didn't have any spirits, but they had lots of beer. And so we used to swap our half bottle of... We each got our half bottle of spirits a month, and we would swap that with so many cans of beer. And the same with the cigarettes, the American cigarettes, which were preferred to our John Player cigarettes.
Did you see much about the advance to Rangoon, you know, the troops going off? Would you have seen anything from...
Well, I was in ACAB at the time, that was a bit off the beaten track in one sense.
Was there extra activity at that time?
Yes, and I think that we knew more about it because we were winning. I think that the authorities were more forthcoming about information. You know, there was a column moving down or whatever. That was one of the little interesting things, that because of the earlier in the campaign, where there was always the danger of, it was just field telephones, and there was always the danger of it being listened into. And we had two generals, General Stopford and General Schoons, I think it was, who'd been at school together and knew each other and so on, and they would have so-called sort of social chats with each other. So, here your wife's going to visit her friends in the north. Oh, yes, they're going, you know, and they were getting quite a lot of information across in that sort of, supposed to be sort of just two friends chatting. I've had a letter from Uncle Peter, and you know, they all knew that was Peter somebody other, and he tells me that they're going to be splitting up or something like that, you know. I mean, all sorts of things that you could find ways of getting information across that wouldn't be obvious to anyone else.
Did you have communication? Were you getting letters and able to send them? The waltz biz.
Yes, but I think for most of us, certainly the earlier crop of waltz biz, they were to people within India. My parents were still in India, so it wasn't like getting a letter back to England. I seem to remember them coming through fairly regularly.
Did most of the early waltz biz have relatives in India, or, you know, earlier in Burma? Did they all have connections to that area, would you think?
Yes, I think so, because mostly they were recruited from either army. They were either army families or tea planters. There were a lot of tea planters' wives, because the tea planters were called up. and the wives went into the Waterbys. So they were people who knew each other or knew each other's backgrounds fairly well.
And of course, some of them were lost their dear ones in the war, I understand.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. And we had two deaths amongst the Waterbys. One was in an accident. I think they were both accidents in a jeep. So that was very distressing.
Who were they?
The one I knew about was in Rangoon, and we had these static canteens. And she was going to a party and got off. She finished at the end of the canteen session. She went off early. And a young man had come to pick her up in a jeep, and he failed to notice that what he thought was a crossroads wasn't, and drove straight into a bank. And he was all right, but she was killed and didn't have seat belts and things like that, with the thing that opens the window going through her head. And I had to go and identify the body. I mean, somebody came back, we were still finishing packing up the canteen. Somebody said Barbara Wace, her name was. And the other one I don't know. She wasn't somebody I knew, and she was in the northern part, and I don't... She was an older one. She was killed in an accident.
And this lady's name was Barbara...
Barbara Wace.
W-A-C.
I think it's Wace or Wade. W-A-C-E. And her parents had were not keen on her going. They didn't want her to join up. So it was always so that was a shock. Because, you know, she was young, and it was such an unnecessary... And I don't think he was drunk or anything. It was just misjudgment.
Didn't in Taylor... come to inspect or, you know, to check that all was...
Yes, she used to come round regularly and see that, you know, and you could tell her things that... And she always had bright ideas about things. You'd tell her something and she'd say, well, why don't we do so-and-so and so-and-so? And you'd think, oh, yes, what a good idea, you know. Or she'd use her clout to get things made better. But it was taken for granted that there would never be any complaints about the sort of living, uncomfortable living accommodation or anything, because that was just the way it was. And we were all young. We didn't worry too much about things like that.
Did you ever use the library? I understand there was a library set up, is that right, for the Waterbys and for the troops as well? That
I think right towards the end there was. We had somebody, a rather older Waterby, who had been a teacher and was very keen on providing something like this, but I didn't really come across it.
Did you meet many of the generals?
General Stopford. Yes, he was a very, very pro Waterby, and very, you know, he was one of the ones who didn't need to be talked into having us. He was keen to have us, and he was a very easy bloke and used to come round and see us, and. General Schoons and General... I can't remember the names.
Was Slim? Did you say
Slim?
Oh,
yes, Slim, yes. Now, he was very pro-Waterby too, and wrote a very nice foreword in our book.
Did you meet his wife? Did she ever come? Mrs.
Aileen?
Yes.
No, didn't meet her. But... he used to come if he was anywhere within distance. He used to come and see teams.
You seem to have interacted equally with the other ranks as well as the officers. Am I right in thinking that?
That's well, how it feels to me, yes. I mean, well, I always felt a bit sorry for the other ranks because, you know, there were vast numbers of them and we couldn't sort of go and have a meal with them in the same way. But during the day when we were, you know, in the canteen, we'd chat away.